This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
The counterbalance to the death lineup isn't putting Durant at the four. It's putting Robertson at the four, which the entire time I've been railing on Robertson, I've been saying it's because he's not a shooting guard.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Would be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzart.
When you're taking away driving lanes from LeBron James, that's LeBron's thing, is he just beast and he gets in there and Bogut's down there saying no and causing some problems and at least just getting in the way, which usually helps.
Well, if you like that, you're gonna love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
So I remember at some point last year when the Warriors really started to be the oh my god, this team is incredible type good. We had the discussion about the Warriors' three-point shooting, and beyond the Warriors' three-point shooting, just the general direction that the game is going, which we've been talking about this a lot. We are firmly in the pace and space era. Three-point shooting is at a premium. You know, you got what are the viral videos that you see on Vine or Twitter or whatever. You see Steph Curry draining half-court shots. You see these guys taking these outrageous full-court shots. But either way, guys are shooting threes now. You know, we talk about Karl Anthony Towns. What was one of his skills as a big man? The fact that he could shoot a three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty clear this is a big part of the game now. But some are saying this is going way beyond the NBA as well and actually ruining one of our favorite pastimes, pickup.
I found this article written by Wall Street Journal, and it's talking about international tournaments and this team of 65-year-olds. And what they're talking about is how they have, you know, some of the players, this guy Bob, I hope I don't butcher his last name, Mazarsmith or something like that, 83 years old, has two artificial knees, still playing basketball.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I hope that I'm A, still alive at 83, and B, still playing basketball at 83.
Right. But this guy who said much of his game when he was playing in these leagues was driving the paint and making a layup and attacking the basket. And his response is, you know, as you get older, it gets harder to drive the lanes. So he just kind of watched Curry's game and changed his game from that. His team actually won that tournament at 82 years old because the whole team just kind of started shooting Curry threes.
I mean, that's when you go to play pickup, I'll play with pickup now every once in a while. I'll get into like a random game at the Y I'm not talking about when I play against you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one specific game, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I got into a 3-on-3 game at the Y with these guys, and they did nothing but shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And so I would just drive the lane because everybody's out on the perimeter the whole time.
And that's starting to happen with me too, is where I'm living, the basketball court I play on is right next to a school. And so after the kids get done school, they all come over. They're like high school and middle school kids, and we got into this game, you know, and I'm like, all right, well, I mean, I'm not gonna play that hard. I don't want to, you know, block anybody and made anybody feel bad. I'd feel terrible like doing that to them. So I just kind of play like this weird older Kevin Garnett point guard-esque type player where all I do is just pass the ball and I kind of teach them what to do and tell them where to go. And man, the guys we were playing against were just chucking up no form whatsoever in the shot, just throwing it up there for a three, and they wouldn't miss. But when they did miss, they missed so bad, which is another big thing that we can talk about in the Cavs Warriors game that was noticeable as well. Like, the second you're taking those long threes, if you get in their face and it throws them off even a slight bit, the misses aren't just like, oh, it hits the back of the rim and goes out. It's like, usually it's an air ball or it's really painfully obvious miss.
Well, you know why that is. I actually just watched a video of a guy that dropped a basketball off of the Hoover Dam.
Mm-hmm.
And so it starts with an M, and it's something, I can't remember what it's called.
It puts backwards motion.
A backwards motion, essentially. Yeah. So the ball not only dropped as far down as the length of the dam, it flew as far horizontally, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. So it has to do with, you know, like physics or something. I mean, it's really incredible. Did you see that video?
I know exactly which video you're talking about. They put backspin on it, and as the ball's going down, it just slowly goes out and out and
out.
It's the way the wind's rushing off the ball and the way it's spinning and all that stuff. Like, it really, It's interesting.
So that's why they're missing those 3-point shots.
Well, I don't know if that's why.
Physics.
But it just translates over. It's frustrating because instead of learning amazing ball handling, driving the lane, and learning the pick and roll, because I'll tell you, I set a pick for this one kid, and he looked at me like I was an idiot. And I'm like, that means go around me. And then he finally did it, and he realized how freaking open he was, and so for the rest of the time, he's calling for me to do picks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, see how good this works? See how open you are? It was still a three. Fair. But he had an open three instead of a contested three.
Well, you can still set a pick at the top of the key or whatever.
Yeah, but I still hate the top of the key. You have so many more options than just a three-point shot.
I just wish when someone would set a pick for me, they would roll to the basket, because I always feel like every time they do and I pass it to them, it's a pick and pop instead of a pick and roll. And I really want the person that's setting the pick to roll to the basket.
Remember the one time I did do that and you threw it up? And I could have had an alley-oop, but I got so excited that it worked
It was really close. Also, the next time we play basketball, I'm totally going to do the off-the-backboard jump and get it into the okay. hoop.
You've been working on that?
I'm afraid you're going to fall down when you try to do this.
No, I've made it a couple of times doing that. Okay. Also, I have a new crossover move that I've been working on that I'm really excited to try in-game. I don't think I'm quite fast enough at it yet. But it goes from right to left and then behind my back into my right hand again. And I really think I'm going to, I won't trip you up. Kevin's slow. I'll trip Kevin up.
Dude, you have no, you don't score on me. So I don't know what we're talking. Tim the one day said he was going to score 10 points on me and scored a whopping 0 points.
Too score on you.
Welcome to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rafews. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Verzhao, stay trying to get someone ejected. Hashtag come on, bro.
Yeah, Eric Bledsoe is boys with LeBron James. So
He is, and but it wasn't even LeBron James that he tweeted. It was Delly. Yeah. Which is like, you're like three times the size of Delly.
I mean, I saw some tweets on that happenstance. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't actually see the play when it happened.
It's like, if Delly kind of boxes him out, and Verzhao just like goes down.
Just crumples.
He just, and it's like, what?
Now he drew the foul.
He got, yeah.
So it was worth it. I mean, I think that was Delly's third foul too. So it actually had a little bit of an impact on the game. Though the Cavaliers have, like, I don't think not so low-key, been way better with Delly off the floor. But that's neither here nor
but
there.
But so...
it was bad.
The announcers are like, why is Verzhao getting these calls when he's a known flopper? Like, why do you give known floppers the benefit of the doubt in those situations?
Oh, Jeff Van Gundy says that every time that Anderson Verzhao or anybody else that's a known flopper flops.
Yeah.
He said that's like his go-to line.
But it's true. It's like, it's okay, if this guy's known for flopping, then why does he keep getting the calls? I guess when it's in-game like that, you just see someone fall over and you assume.
And you know what we don't assume is we don't assume that every single review that you guys leave us on iTunes is going to be a good one. But let me tell you, we really do appreciate those 4- and 5-star reviews. They really do help out the show. And this week we have one from.
Yeah, this is actually this is number 100, guys. This is number 100 in America.
Yeah,
it's here.
Making strides.
All right. So anyway, the title of the review aptly is 100.
All right. Also, Justin, we waited to read this until you came. We made a point.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
I did tell him just to title it 100, so thank you.
That gets into the review, which we'll get into in a sec. Also, I still don't know where your missing review is. JKid13, did he ever tweet you?
He did not ever tweet me.
Oh, that's disappointing. But anyway, so this review, it's number 100. It's from Ty Meek. It is a 5-star review, and Ty Meek says, I love the show, guys. I think it was Kevin that said, just leave the number 100 for the 100th review. So that was actually Justin.
That's fair. That's
credit
fair.
To Justin there. So here you go, LOL. Great show, fellows.
Oh, aww. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very kind. He listened, and then the call to action.
I like when people listen to us.
Yeah, I like it when they listen as well.
Even if they don't agree, which is fine. If you listen to us and you don't agree with us, just let us know on our Twitter
pages. Well, this is a 5-star review, so hopefully he agrees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good.
Must agree with something, at least with a star ranking.
Right.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Ben Simmons says he has no plans to work out with any teams ahead of the 2016 NBA draft. The Philadelphia 76ers have been trying to schedule a workout with Simmons, but it has not been working out. Simmons has been training in Cleveland. He is represented by Clutch Sports. It is rumored that the 76ers will maybe go out there to watch him. Worth mentioning, the Sixers also did not work out Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, or Jahlil Okafor. It's been rumored that the Memphis Grizzlies have grown concerned about the possibilities of Mike Conley leaving in free agency. He can sign up to a 5-year, $124 million max contract with the Grizzlies, while rival teams can max him out at about $92 million for 4 years. Apparently, the Grizzlies plan on using a video featuring part owner Justin Timberlake as a part of the recruiting pitch to Mike Conley. This is way different than Marc Gasol last offseason, where he re-signed with the Grizzlies without even talking to any rival clubs. Jason Kidd and the Milwaukee Bucks have finalized a 3-year, $18 million contract extension. Kidd will make $5 million in the final season of his original contract before the extension begins in 2017-2018. A $22 million tax incentive was okayed for the Jazz. They're going to update their arena. And lastly in your news, the LA Clippers announced the retirement of assistant coach Kevin Eastman. Eastman served as a Clippers coach for 2 seasons and was an assistant under Clippers president of basketball operations and head coach Doc Rivers in Boston for 8. That's your news for this week.
So this is the part of the show where we want to tell you about one of our awesome sponsors, and that is SeatGeek. So what SeatGeek is it's a free app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device to buy tickets to all sorts of things, including your favorite sporting events, concerts, Broadway, any tickets that you need. SeatGeek has got you covered. And what's cool about SeatGeek is the price you see when you go to make your ticket purchase is the price you're going to pay at checkout. There's no hidden fees like there are on other ticket reselling sites. Nothing's going to surprise you. You know you're getting a good value, and SeatGeek's going to let you know that you're getting the best value by putting tickets that are great value in green. If it's not so great of a value, they're going to have them in red. So SeatGeek is a free app download, like I said, and you can save $20 and really help the show out by entering the code DRIVEANDDISH. That's DRIVEANDDISH, like Drive and Dish NBA podcast, into the SeatGeek app, and you'll save $20 on your first purchase. I know I used it when I went to the Players Tournament a few months back. Either way, it's a win-win for everybody. You'll support the show, you'll save $20, and you know you'll be getting the best value. Just download that SeatGeek app. Again, it's free on your phone, and help out the show.
So this game 5 had a little bit of controversy to it, and it was really disappointing because Kevin and I, we recorded on Saturday. It was the day after the game, and we're like, nothing big can happen between the time we record and the game on Monday. We can record this episode a couple days early and it'll just be equally as relevant.
Nope.
Nope. Nope.
Well, and it's funny because we even had the conversation. We said, I wonder if this is the time where Draymond Green actually gets suspended.
And so,
and then he actually got suspended.
So, and this isn't to throw shade at either of you guys, but editing the episode, the very first comment you guys say on the Draymond Green thing, I believe it was Kevin, he says, there is absolutely no way they suspend me. I took that out because I was like, okay.
To be fair, if we look at it, they didn't really suspend him for the action. They just gave him a flagrant.
Well, they made everything higher.
They had so many flagrants that it just added up. So
it wasn't a flagrant 2, it was a flagrant 1.
They assessed LeBron, the ball tap on LeBron got deemed a flagrant 1, and that's what bumped it up. Steven Adams had always been a flagrant 2.
Okay. I thought that was a flagrant 1, and they moved that
to a flagrant 2. Or it was a flagrant 1, and they upped it to a 2. Before we get into the game, because we obviously have a lot to break down and unpack with Game 5, but the first question is, was this warranted? Do Warriors fans have a beef? Because Warriors fans are pissed.
No. The thing about this is that it's not like Draymond Green did this once. It's not like he did it twice. The league warned him and said, you need to stop hitting players in the balls or else we're going to suspend you. He knew it. He was aware.
Right.
He got baited, and then he did it.
But, like, at the same time, and this is not justifying Draymond Green hitting anybody in the balls, I understand why he was mad in that situation. LeBron James tried to Allen Iverson him.
Right.
Like, he tried to step over him. Did you see Curry's wife's tweet about it?
Yeah, no, I heard all about it.
She needs to chill. Honestly, like, I hate when players' wives get involved. Like, leave the trash talk between the players. That's not a statement against Ayesha Curry. I think Ayesha Curry's great, but it just, you know, I hate when players' wives. Like, it reminded me a few years ago in the Super Bowl when I don't remember if it was Tom. No, it wasn't Tom Brady's wife, because we would have known if it was Giselle. But it was one of the players' wives just freaked out about all the dropped passes and all this. It's just like, leave it alone. Like, Aisha Curry, I'll give her a little bit of points because it was kind of funny. But I just, like, I hate that. And that's across the board. Like, I just don't like when nobody's talk-ish on Twitter, too. That's to me. It's like, if you're not in the game, I don't really want to hear your like, Twitter trash talk. It's just kind of unnecessary.
Well, that's specifically kind of what we do.
Well, not Twitter trash talk, but not media, though,
is what I'm saying. We don't trash talk Twitter. Like we don't subtweet. I don't think we've ever subtweeted anyone. I think we're pretty clear about, and other media members are pretty clear in black and white on their stances of how they feel about certain topics.
But you can understand why Draymond Green would be upset in that said scenario.
I absolutely understand 100% why Draymond Green was upset, and I absolutely 100% think Draymond Green should have got up in LeBron James' face. That is fair.
Don't hit him in the balls.
Don't hit him in the balls. Like, it's as simple as that. Like, don't hit him in the balls. And you know I love these guys, but when Charles Barkley and Matt Barnes are the one defending you in your corner, you're probably wrong.
And it's just, how many times can you hit other players in the groin?
Well, so this is
four,
my,
apparently.
This is my new conspiracy theory, and I was telling this to Kevin earlier today. So if Draymond Green gets another flagrant, he'll have to be suspended for another game. He comes back game six. The Warriors are down by a lot. He gets frustrated. He gets a flagrant. He's out for game seven. The Cavs win in Golden State game seven.
Well, that's the thing, is that LeBron knew very well what he was doing. Right. He baited Draymond Green.
Well, not only
it.
That, he made a big fuss about it in the press conference afterwards, yeah. like almost tattletale-esque.
Also, I want to talk about this because this is just, it all gets into a lot of things. Because it has ridiculous. Did LeBron tattletale a little bit? Yeah, of course he did. At the same time, Klay Thompson came out and said this is a man's league and that this is, some people gets under their skin. Klay Thompson bitched and moaned so much after that Mozgov screen after game three where all the dirty went. Like, just like, the Warriors are so likable and so unlikable at the same time.
Well,
I've never seen anything like it.
The Warriors like to talk. Mm-hmm. And they talk and talk.
They're just insecure. The Warriors reek of insecurity, and I don't get it. You're 73-9. You're probably going to win game six. You're going to be the best team ever. What the world do you have to be insecure about?
You know,
I don't get it. You're better than everyone. Like, you're sitting on the throne. Like, why do you care what these other people have to say? I don't get it. It reeks of insecurity.
I know why. Take Curry one-on-one against LeBron James.
Or Kevin Love can just put Curry on the floor.
Well, okay, I wasn't talking about Kevin Love, but I mean, like, LeBron James. Like, the thing with Curry, and this is no knock on Curry, he doesn't give off that, like, really, really overly athletic vibe. Like, LeBron James is a monster. Kevin Durant is a monster. Anthony Davis is a monster. You put Curry up against the top 10 guys in the league with him one-on-one, I don't think Curry can beat any of them.
I kind of agree with that, that's a little spicy. I'm not gonna go that far,
but I agree with that completely.
But think about it, you got LeBron
one-on-one.
I think the Warriors,
other than maybe Harden,
I think a lot of the Warriors,
yeah, Curry would beat Harden.
Curry would beat Harden. Lillard,
all right, relax. Steph Curry is better than Dame. It's close, but like, let's not get too hot takey.
Well,
Steph
Curry, that's not, he's not, the argument about isn't who's better.
I'm saying one-on-one. Would Curry's, no offense to Curry, but his defense is lax
sometimes.
Kevin Durant would destroy Curry.
Right, but
that's just because they're bigger.
Right, but the one-on-one argument is silly. A lot of these Warriors guys, I mean, Draymond Green, but it's the same thing with the Warriors guys that we say about the Spurs guys, is you don't really know whether they're system players or whether they truly are that great.
Right.
What I do know is that the Warriors system works. They're all 73-9. This team is just, they've beaten everybody all year. Again, they're in position to go back-to-back. I understood the insecurity a little bit after last season, because you had people going, oh, well, they didn't have to play anyone good, and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving were hurt in the finals, and everybody was injured, and that the Warriors walked into it. So I understood, because I thought the Warriors should have had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, because people forget last year, this was the team that was the best team in the league from game one to game six of that final series in June. So I didn't understand the insecurity then, but now to me, it's like, who have you not proven wrong at this point?
Right.
It just seems petty. It seems like the Warriors make themselves unlikable, and I don't get it.
Well, it's like, you know, they are small ball lineup, so they almost have like small guy syndrome where they feel underrated at all times. So they gotta, You know what I mean? That's why.
Well, my problem isn't that they feel underrated. It's that they talk and talk and talk, but they get so offended when anyone says anything bad about them.
Right.
You know, like they just sit there and they trash talk and trash talk and talk smack. And like the point that Kevin just brought up about, you know, Klay Thompson saying it's a man's league when, you know, just a few days earlier he got upset about like a moving screen by Mozgov. I mean, I get that they're unlikable, and at this point they're so unlikable that I'm rooting for the Cavs.
But I don't even think that the Warriors are necessarily an unlikable team. I think there's a ton to like about Steph Curry. I think there's a ton to like about Iggy.
No, but they've become unlikable.
Well, they're becoming unlikable because they're doing dumb things that make them unlikable.
Like hitting players in the balls?
Like Draymond Green was always borderline unlikable because Draymond Green talks. He's one of those guys that you love if he's on your team and you hate if he's not on your team. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is with Draymond Green is what made Draymond Green so unlikable? The fact that he kicks Steven Adams square in the balls. I think a lot of Warriors fans think it's a makeup suspension, which, I mean, that's just the rule, unfortunately. But at the same time, you know, there was another one I remember against Houston when Golden State played Houston. Draymond Green in the last 5 seconds of the game tackled somebody.
Michael Beasley.
Right.
Yeah. For like no reason.
Right. And it's just like,
and he never got called for it.
Right, well, but he got upgraded. I'm saying that flagrant and that unnecessary play, like that's the reason you're sitting out in game five. Like it's a culmination of your actions. And yeah, I think it's a little culmination of everything. And so you can feel a little cheaper in that regard. But you know, Draymond Green, I can't say I'm here defending the guy. And Klay Thompson just, you know, miss me with that man's league comment. Don't bitch and complain about an illegal screen and then say it's a man's league. Like, give me a break, Klay Thompson. That's embarrassing.
Well, I guess we should talk about Game 5.
And how Kevin brought this up, but Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James combined for 84 points.
They did. It almost was as great as...
Hold on. How much would it be if Kevin Love wasn't in that equation?
82.
Okay. that's my point. Hey, Thank you.
It reminds me. You guys don't remember when Kobe Bryant and Kwame Brown against the Raptors combined for 84 points? It was crazy.
But it's like you played... And on top of that, and my beef's not with specifically Kevin Love. Like, it's with Thompson, too. And I understand Thompson was out there for the rebounds, but he was out there for 41 minutes.
And he put
and
up
had
three shots?
6 points, three shots, and some free throws. Yeah, 10 free throws, made four of them. Mm-hmm. It's just like, but even Kevin Love, I mean, he was out there for 32 minutes, put up five shots, and, three three-pointers and five shots. Like, he only made one.
Yeah, he missed two three-pointers. I mean, he wasn't great, but when Kevin Love was on the floor, there were a plus 21. I think.
Yeah, that's why I was confused, because they have Kevin Love with that stat line, and then he's a plus 18, and I'm like, how on earth is he a plus 18 all these terrible numbers?
Well, it's not terrible, though.
Four personal fouls.
It's a lack of... As far as the shots go, a lot of that has to do with what were the combined total shots that LeBron James and Kyrie Irving took, like 50?
Well, that's
54?
54.
Well, two players have 41 points each. You know, you imagine that your role players are going to get less shots. So I think in that context, there's definitely a valid point to that. I guess what disappointed me with Kevin Love is with Draymond Green out, we've talked about all series long about how just bad of a matchup that is. And here I thought was Kevin Love's chance to really get free and eat up, and he just didn't.
I guess... on the side of the Warriors was how blatantly obvious they struggled without Draymond Green at center. They scored, 13 points in the fourth quarter? Like, 13 points?
Well, I think over the course of the series that the only lineup that's a positive for the Warriors is them playing Draymond Green at the center, where every other lineup they're actually negative against the Cavs.
And I would say Bogut only played 7 minutes, but that's because he got hurt. So yeah, that probably also hurt.
Are you guys worried about that knee sprain?
Yes, only because knee things in general make me cringe. And so watching that video, I was just kind of like, oh god.
Well,
like,
what do we talk about with the Warriors' offense all the time? We talk about what Draymond Green and what Andrew Bogut in particular really do with screens to get Curry, get Thompson, get these guys to open looks that they need. And granted, getting Draymond Green back is obviously going to be a huge boost, and I don't think this is the end of the world for the Warriors. But Andrew Bogut's played a lot of quality minutes for them both in this series and in the Western Conference Finals. I think Andrew Bogut is one of those guys who doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but he provides a lot of other value. And it's, you know, if the Cavaliers are defensively locked in, not having Bogut even for those limited minutes is gonna hurt them.
Well, and I guess that brings me to my question: who do you then bring up as your backup if Bogut cannot play?
Azili,
Varejao. Varejao's fine.
Varejao play a lot of small ball.
Bogut provides such a not like a wall, but such a problem for LeBron James when he's driving. Same kind of idea with Kevin Durant was put Bogut down there and at least make them have to alter their shot. You know, when it's a smaller ball lineup with an athletic guy like LeBron James or Kevin Durant, you can just go in there and force your way in and kind of, you know, make a good amount of your attempts. But when there's Bogut or someone bigger making you alter your shots, the attempt rate and the success rate will probably go down.
Right. So you could go small, and then you could try and deal with that problem with having a better offense.
Yeah.
Or you could start Azili, or you could even start Anderson Varejao.
Well, they actually started Iggy.
Right. In Draymond Green's place. I did find it kind of inspiring, though, that the team during the national anthem, the Warriors,
left a spot.
Yeah, how they left an open spot for Draymond Green.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, you heard the crowd when they were leaving were chanting, "LeBron's a bitch."
Oh, every time LeBron got the ball, he was being booed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. LeBron was locked in. I mean, this was one of those vintage games. I think he heard a lot of the criticism. Because, I mean, LeBron James was getting as much criticism as the Warriors were. I mean, this really was, for better or for worse, it was once again a prove-it game for LeBron James. I still can't believe those are a thing. You know, he came out and balled out. And it was, I mean, really in the third quarter in particular, I thought the way he moved the ball around and the way that, you know, when they kind of started to hone in on him and weren't letting him get the shots he liked, I think he had 5 assists in the quarter, really sparked them in a big quarter that kind of put this game out of hand and allowed the Cavaliers to take control. And I mean, this is big. They obviously got to help with Draymond Green being out, because I didn't think the Cavaliers were going to win this fifth game if the Warriors were fully stocked just in Golden State. And I think that obviously helped the Cavaliers back. I still don't think the Cavaliers are going to win game 6, even going back to Cleveland. But just that natural, they're going home now at the end of the day. You know, they've played Golden State tough twice at home. They blew them out of the water one time.
Over the course of the playoffs.
Obviously, Golden State still has the ultimate trump card with having game 7 at home. But if you're Golden State, you know, they didn't want to go back to Cleveland. You wanted to close this out on your home floor and not make that flight. Now you got to make that flight. All of a sudden, Cleveland win game 6.
It's anybody's ball game. To your point, it kind of went with Curry. They said after the game, he was still in his jersey, just sitting in the locker room, like deep in thought. Everyone had already left. He was just the last one there. Kind of, you know, you gotta work your way through it, I guess, when something like that happens. But that goes to your point. It shows like he knows how important that game was, and if they could have won that game, you know, obviously they would have won it all. But now,
well, they just went through this, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, coming back against the Thunder.
And I can't believe we've gone this long without mentioning him. Yeah, but Kyrie Irving, just absolutely fantastic last night. 17 of 24 from the floor for 41 points, like we said. That makes him, along with Wilt Chamberlain, the only players in NBA Finals history to score over 40 points and do it on 70% shooting from the field.
Well, so my question was, who had the better 41-point game? LeBron James or Irving?
Irving.
LeBron did have the 7 assists, which I think Irving had 6.
Yeah, but his was on 70% shooting.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. What was the stat with LeBron? He was the first, or other than Magic Johnson, was the first to have 41 points plus 15 rebounds and plus 7 assists.
I mean, 16 rebounds is huge.
I know that. Like, and for LeBron James, like, I would expect 16 rebounds. You got 15 from Tristan Thompson, but that's who you expect the high number of rebounds from.
I mean, over the course of the series, LeBron James is averaging 28, 12, 8, 2.5 steals and 2 blocks, while shooting 49.6%.
And that's the thing, is like, yes, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving played this well, but I don't think that those two playing that well again will translate if Draymond Green is there.
I mean, if you can get 82 points out of two players, I think you're in a good spot.
What was it that I think it was Barkley. Maybe it was Barkley. Someone was talking about how 51 points is the magic number for Curry and Thompson to score. If those two together can score 51 points, the Warriors are like,
you know,
golden.
3% of all the three-pointers made last season were made by Curry and Thompson.
That's impressive.
And they make up 0.5% of the sample size of players that hit a three. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, what do you guys think going into game 6? I mean, the Cavaliers, it seemed like, had the best game they were going to play in game 5, and I'm just afraid that they're not going to be able to do. I mean, the Cavaliers clearly have no room for error. They have to do this 2 more times. I don't know. I think they'll get the boost from home, and I think it's going to be competitive, but I don't know. I've got Golden State closing still.
I think the Cavs protect home court and lose in Oakland game 7.
That's what I want, mainly because back when we did predictions, I said Cavs win game.
Well, hey,
seven.
I just want you guys to know that my Cavs in five, or my Warriors in five pick was looking really damn good until Draymond Green got suspended.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to talk about, and this is a hypothetical, but I'm going to say this now. And if you're a Game of Thrones fan, Game 7 hypothetically is Sunday at 8 o'clock. Game of Thrones is at 9 o'clock. I know I'm going to watch Game 7, and you have to watch Game 7. But come on, NBA, you could have put the game on Saturday.
No, why isn't it just Sunday at like 3? I'm so tired of the NBA and their damn playoffs. It's the worst. It's the absolute worst. It's like the Super Bowl. I guess the Super Bowl is on a little bit late, but it still starts at what, like 5? Or something?
6:30, I think, usually.
Fine. It's a reasonable time. I'm so tired of the NBA. If you're going to do it on a Sunday, make it an early game.
You know what they say. The more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Want to know a little secret about education? It'll improve your sex life.
It's random NBA player highlights on the Drive and Dish podcast.
Today's segment of Random NBA Player, I want to highlight a player on the Warriors that we don't talk about enough. It's not Steph Curry, it's not Klay Thompson, it's not Andrew Bogut, and no, it's not Ninja Warrior Draymond Green. We are going to talk about Brandon Rush. Brandon Rush's college career was a successful but controversial one. He played 3 years for the Jayhawks and led them in scoring, rebounding, and three-point percentage at the starting small forward for his final junior season. His sophomore year, he tore his ACL doing a secret workout for the New York Knicks. The NBA said they were going to sanction the Knicks for the secret workout. Knicks were, at the time, led by Isaiah Thomas, and we all remember how that turned out. Brandon Rush's junior year, he led Kansas to a 2008 championship title and was rated the number one small forward in college. Following the NCAA championship run, he declared for the NBA draft. Makes sense, most players would, and was selected number 13 overall by the Portland Trail Blazers. He's kind of jumped around the league a little bit. He was traded the following year to the Warriors for Lou Amundsen, of all players. Remember him? I think Lou Amundsen is still around doing a whole lot of nothing somewhere. The Knicks, maybe. That makes sense. In 2013, Rush was then traded to the Jazz for Richard Jefferson. That same trade is part of what brought Iggy to the Warriors. Funny how things worked out there. Brandon Rush in the following year then ended up signing with the Warriors as an unrestricted free agent. Right now he plays spot minutes, but he has been solid over his professional career, averaging 11 points and 5 rebounds on 43% shooting per 36 minutes. Your random NBA player of the week, Brandon Rush of the Golden State Warriors. So I want to take a minute and I want to tell you about our sponsor, DailyNBAHighlights.com. It is a 100% free daily NBA email that you can get sent right to you, even when you sign up for it, and they send it right to your email box every morning at 7 a.m., DailyNBAHighlights.com. There's not even an ad. It's completely free. This is an awesome service. Justin, Kevin, and myself, we're all signed up for it, and I'll tell you a little bit about what the newsletter will entail. It's going to start off with some NBA history, what happened this day in the NBA. Then there's going to be some daily links. For example, today's daily links includes the NBA Finals Game 5 mini movie. Then there's a player spotlight section, so any news or articles that were written about specific players in the NBA, it's all right there. Then there's a bonus section. This one's funny. The His History of Basketball with Snoop Dogg. Who'd have thought that that was out there? It's a video. I'm going to check it out. Some Shaq and the Fool stuff. Steven Adams mural. Then it goes into all the NBA podcasts that came out the day before, so that's a really cool resource as well. Then it goes into recaps and highlights from any games the night before. Obviously, right now, it's a whole lot of stuff about the NBA Finals. And then at the very end, it's weekly notes, and it has some stuff about when basketball is going to be on TV, which will be really handy when we're keeping up with the Olympics and Summer League, that kind of thing, because it's, you know, it's not as well known as other stuff. The Daily NBA Highlights newsletter is completely free. There's no reason not to sign up for it. If you're a hoops head, you should be getting this in your inbox completely free. DailyNBAHighlights.com. Just put in your email address. It's there. Also, if you forget, you can go to drivingdishpodcast.com. There's a sponsors tab at the top of the page. Just click that and we'll show you where the site is. DailyNBAHighlights.com.
You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rapies, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousard. Follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA.
So while I was away this weekend, I was hanging out at a pool with the girlfriend, and I got the ESPN update that the Timberwolves were talking to the Bulls about their fifth pick and possibly Jimmy Butler.
There's a couple of teams going after Jimmy Butler. You have the Celtics and the Wolves. They're both pursuing.
I guess, does he fit with those two teams in your mind is my first question.
Yes.
I also, before we get into it, also propose this question on Reddit. What is Jimmy Butler's worth to you? What is he worth, and do you trade him?
Well, and that's the big question. If you're the Bulls GM staff and you trade Jimmy Butler and you only get a 5 pick back, your entire staff needs to be fired.
Well, that's they're looking for a high draft pick and a impact player right now. That's what they're looking for Jimmy Butler.
The question for me is, let's do a little hypothetical here. Bulls come to you and say, we'll give you Jimmy Butler straight up for Andrew Wiggins in the number 5.
That's too much, I think.
Off the board.
Yeah, that's too much in my opinion.
You could sell me on trading Wiggins for Butler. The only thing that scares me a little bit is the timeline, but Butler, I mean, I love Wiggins' potential, but with Towns as your guy there, and I think Jimmy Butler is an animal ready to be unleashed.
You could talk me into a straight up, but not by throwing in the pick.
I know, and it's a little steep with the pick too.
Like, and also the money doesn't work.
I think, and the Bulls probably wouldn't consider this because obviously you have Derrick Rose, but I think a player more like Ricky Rubio and the 5 pick.
I don't think that's at all worth it. Jimmy Butler, to me, you have to get one of these young guys if you're going from Timberwolves. And it's got to be, I mean, you're not getting Towns.
I pulled up the NBA ESPN trade machine and just want to say this, that Jimmy Butler, he's averaged 21 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists while making a second straight All-Star game and third consecutive All-Defensive second team last season. And I pulled up the trade machine for the Wolves and the Celtics. In order to make this work, the Wolves would have to give up LaVine, Dang, Shabazz, and Peck, plus the 5 pick.
I think I would do it.
Zach LaVine, Gorgui Dieng, Shabazz, Muhammad, and you have to throw in Peck to make the money work.
Wow, that's a lot. I think that's a lot to do it.
If you are the Celtics, I made it work with the number 3 pick, Avery Bradley, Crowder, and Solinger.
See, I wouldn't do that. That's too many. At least on the Celtics side, I feel like.
But the Celtics need an impact player now.
But think about this team. Rubio, Butler, Wiggins, Towns, and whoever the hell you want to throw at power forward at that point.
Nice.
Right? That's a really exciting team.
I value Jimmy Butler really high. I think Jimmy Butler hasn't even remotely hit his potential.
Tayshaun Prince maybe at the power forward spot.
They got to stop with Tayshaun Prince, man.
I know, but at that point you would have traded everyone else. So
I mean, thankfully he's not under contract for next year.
Well,
I mean, it's interesting. I think that both teams are going to be bidding to get him. And
here's the thing with the Bulls in the idea of doing a trade where you kind of get a few of those players back. And this was brought up by one of the responses on Reddit. They said no, they shouldn't trade Butler, that he's a franchise player. And once Rose's contract ends or Rose goes away, once they can trade him or whatever, Jimmy Butler will be free to go. And they'll be a good free agent destination. But he said you could trade Jimmy and then try to build around Dragan Bender. If you can get Bender.
Bender's not a player you build around, and we're going to go into that
here in
the next segment, but I don't think that Bender's a player that you build around. I think that...
What
that
about Dunn?
I don't think any of these guys other than Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons are players you build around.
Hold on. Can we take a moment and get a word from our sponsor?
Wanted to take a second to talk to you about Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek, gamer, and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you'll get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. And they are all licensed, so you know that they are the real deal. You have until the 19th. You're running out of time. Only a few more days left. The 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe to receive that month's box. This month being Dystopia. Perfect for fans of Fallout, Terminator, The Matrix, Bioshock, and RoboCop. And if you're wondering why this might be a good deal to you, each box contains at least $45 in value, and the items are created exclusively for the Loot Crate community, so nobody else is going to have these things. Again, you have until the 19th to sign up for this month's box, which is Dystopia. And the way you can show Loot Crate you support the Drive and Dish podcast, head to lootcrate.com/driveanddish and enter the code driveanddish. You'll save $3 off your new subscription.
So lost in the finals, we started to do this for you guys last week. The draft is very quietly creeping up. I think it's about 2 weeks away at this point. So we talked a few prospects last week, Dragan Bender, Jamal Murray, among others. But we want to talk 3 different guys this week. And the first one up is Chris Dunn. So Chris Dunn, just a clue of who he is. He is a junior point guard coming out of Providence University. He's 6'4", weighs 205 pounds. He is a point guard, is going to play point guard in the league, not one of these guys like Jamal Murray where you could realistically see him switch into the 2. His stats at Providence last year, he played in 33 games, averaged 16 points, about six assists, two steals a game. You know, pretty good with the ball. Only turned it over 3.5 times per game. A lot of people have Chris Dunn ranked as the truest pure point guard in this draft. Again, I mentioned Murray a little bit there. And, you know, for a breakdown of Jamal Murray, go back and listen to the last episode. Tim and I talked about him. But Murray is a better shooter than Chris Dunn is. He's, you know, you could see him transition to that too, where, like I said, Chris Dunn is going to be your point guard. I don't know. I go back and Chris Dunn is one of these guys that I go back and forth on all the time.
You know what I like about Chris Dunn? And so I'll be honest, I hadn't really been focusing too much on the draft because of the finals going on. So I'm still kind of new to reading up about the players and stuff like that. But the first headline I saw about Chris Dunn is that he is refusing to work out for teams unless it's against Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram or Jamal Murray. And that right there shows this guy is such a defensive guy, and he's so willing to show teams he can shut people down that I was just immediately intrigued. I was like, oh, this guy's got, like, he wants it.
Oh, he's my fourth favorite player in the draft right now that I've watched tape on.
I was reading up an article where they were putting a bunch of, like, GIFs together.
GIFs.
Sure. Of different spots and things he was good at. One of the things I was really impressed with was the pick and roll passing that he had.
Oh, it's great. It's fantastic. He's also really good at going to the pick and pop guy. Like, he's just really good at a pick and roll.
Well, he's so quick, too. And I think that helps. He's really good at getting out into transition. He can use his quickness to set off opportunities that he wouldn't have otherwise.
Well, 23% of his offense comes from transition.
Right. Say that first step, it allows him to make cuts when he's running the floor on offense. I mean, his burst is already some of the best of the league. And, I mean, you see it translate to his defense as well. I mean, we talked about his steals. He averages almost 3 steals a game. I mean, that's elite no matter where you put it.
You know, with the pick and roll being his best thing where, yeah, the pick and roll, and then you start cutting in, teams are going to start to catch on to that. And if you can't stop the cut in and pull up from three and make them pay for you know, assuming you're going to drive, then it's going to become a problem, and people are going to give you that space, which right now, from my understanding, a three-point shot is kind of not his, or a pull-up jumper in general is not really his forte.
I think it was decent. It was a little over 30% off the year. I think he had 101 attempts total. But that being said, to your point about not having a pull-up shot, is he is really good off the elbow with his offense. I really like that. His assist, a 41% assist rate. I don't agree with Kevin that he has a low turnover rate, though. I think, Kevin, you mentioned that it was what, 3.5? And that your turnover rate should be a 3-to-1 ratio, and that's about 2-to-1. He gambles a lot with his no-look passing.
Yeah, they were saying he's kind of risky. He likes to do the flashy passes.
He does. He likes to do the flashy passes. That being said, he's a pure point guard, and coming from a team that has had to watch combo guards for the last God knows how many seasons, is that there's just a intrinsic amount of value out of a pure point guard.
Well, they were saying, and now thinking about it with the not so great shooting, other than this year, the comparisons to Rondo have to come up, right?
I mean, he didn't remind me of Rondo. I think his shot's a little bit better than Rondo.
Okay.
He kind of reminds me of Darren Collison.
Which isn't a bad comparison. I mean, no. You know, and I think Darren Collison kind of gets a bad rap from time to time because of injury and you know, he gets on bad situations. But I don't know. So I guess a lot of the talk was Boston drafting this guy, but I don't see why they would, because they have Bradley and Marcus Smart. Like, why would...
And Isaiah Thomas. Like, yeah, no, there's no reason
why
to.
Would you make Isaiah Thomas, after the season he had, still be a six man? Like,
right.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-mm. Especially with Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see Boston. I could see Phoenix. I think you could talk yourself into it if you're Phoenix and kind of pair him with Booker.
I mean, if it's Phoenix that does it, then we're going to have Archie Goodwin and another one of our point guards at the door.
I think he'd be great in Minnesota as your point guard of the future, because eventually, I mean, Rubio is a bit older, and eventually you're
Rubio's
gonna
wanna... like 24. Yeah, why does everyone think he's so old?
I will say Dunn is 22. That is worth mentioning. Yeah. He's probably the older one.
He's older. I mean, Dunn, the biggest thing with Dunn is just on the offensive end is the inconsistency a bit.
And not to cut you off, Kevin, but I think, like, my favorite part about his defensive ability that you kind of mentioned a little bit is how quick he can recover. And with that 6'9 wingspan, he can get back on. He's really good about staying with ball handlers, and he's really good about navigating screens. And he can guard, and he can switch two or three different positions. And when you have a point guard that can guard down all the way to the small forward, like, that's incredibly valuable.
And there was another point they made, something about how he's good at reading defense, so he can kind of tell which way the ball is going, and that shows up in his steals.
Oh, his on ball defender prowess is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is exciting. The only thing about the shooting is, yes, you know, you can try to work on it. He is 22, so who knows how much better the shot or the 3-point shot or his jump up shot in general can get. He is one of the older guys.
Hell, even Rondo improved his this last year.
Which he did. And that's why when I was making the comparison, I said other than this year, because, you know, Rondo somehow found a shot.
Yeah, at least to a certain... He even got his free throws above 50%, which
gotta give him that.
For him means that you can handle him if you have him on your fantasy league. Moving on to Marquese Chriss.
Yeah, Marquese Chriss is the next guy we want to spotlight. He is a 6'10 power forward coming out of the University of Washington, just 18 years old, averages almost 14 points a game. This is a late riser. I mean, this is a guy who... Is come a bit, not out of nowhere, but has really come up recently. I mean, I think Draft Express had him the highest of all the big boards I looked at. He's sitting at number 3 right now. I know he's rising up mine. I don't quite have him at 3. I said last week I got Bender there. But, I mean, Marquese Chriss, like we said, he's going to be a power forward, it looks like, when he translates into the league. And I think the first thing that immediately comes to mind is he's one of these guys that can stretch the floor. I mean, he made 35% of his 3-pointers in college for a power forward. That's, you know, pretty good about what you can expect out of that guy. And when we talk about a pace and space type league, I think he's one of these guys who can fit into a more modern offense.
He's also a really good rim protector, and we always talk about how valuable a 3-point shot is. Well, so is a good rim protector. It's so hard to find in this league.
Yeah, the only problem I know is, I guess, for rebounding, he's only averaging about, what, 8 rebounds
his
40
offensive
minutes.
Rebounding is really good. His defensive rebounding is really bad because he seems to have a hard time boxing out, not because he can't do it, but because he doesn't know where he should be when he's boxing
right.
players out.
Which is fair, and it's worth mentioning the dude's only 18 years old, but he's at, what, 233 pounds, but they said compared to last year, he put on about 20 pounds of muscle. Like, that right there in itself is impressive. He's got a vertical of 39 inches. Like, the dude can get up.
And when he gets a shot off, if you're looking at his feet and the way he sets his feet when he goes for a shot, it's just so consistent every single time. He's really good at getting his feet set when he receives a quick pass. Kevin mentioned it. He can shoot from 3. He has a nice face-up jumper. Mm-hmm. He catches a lot of lobs. He's great defensively. He kind of reminds me of Jarepko.
Okay. See, I was when the whole time I was reading up about Chris, is in my mind, I was just thinking, God, the Raptors could use this guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Raptors severely need a power forward.
Right, and that's what I was thinking. A young power forward coming in with, if they can get...
I mean, I think it would be more likely that Bender goes at 3 and that the Suns end up swooping up Marquese Chriss.
Yeah.
I don't see the Suns taking a shooting guard or a point guard.
Well, they got so many.
Right,
it didn't work in the past.
No,
so
we have Bogdanovich, or the Suns have Bogdanovich overseas, too, who's going to come over this mm-hmm. year, who's another shooting guard. Mm-hmm. And for the love of God, the Suns just don't need another shooting guard. Or point guard, really.
No, I think it works out for you guys at 4 that either Bender or Chris is probably going to be on the board. So I think either one of those picks you can't go wrong with.
Hoping for Bender, though.
Yeah. One of the biggest problems with Chris, though, and this is just, I mean, this is simple. I don't know whether it's a lack of focus. I don't know whether it's making the wrong adjustments. But this dude fouled out of 15 games last year.
He used to play football. So he grabs fouls at about, I think it's 5.7 per 40 minutes. So the dude used to play football, and that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, he fouled out almost more than half his games. I think in another 10, I read that he had 4 fouls. So obviously college, it's a little bit different. You only have 5 fouls as to where you're given 6 here in the league, but that's a major concern. And a lot of it was more early on, but at the same time, that adjustment is going to be there. But again, this is an 18-year-old kid. There's a lot of potential here. I think his range is something that is really positive. And a quick little fun fact, courtesy of our friends here at Draft Express. Tim, you talked about his defensive rebounding, or lack thereof, I should say. Only Thaddeus Young had a worse rebounding rate, and Thad Young on the defensive boards, and Thad Young in college pretty much played the 3.
Yeah, it's he's a good offensive rebounder and really poor defensive rebounder. And as long as you're talking about the fouls, the way he's getting these is he's biting for a lot of pump fakes, mm-hmm. and that's where they're getting him on a lot of these fouls. So as long as he can clean that up, and I think you can clean that up.
Well, he's only 18, but
right,
my first worry with that is, you know, you come into the NBA where they like to fish for fouls from time
to
time.
Well, he's not an impact player right now.
Right. Right, I agree. He's a project, which is understandable. At 18 years old, you're going
to
be.
So the final prospect we want to highlight is Jaylen Brown coming out of California. He was a freshman, 6'7", 19 years old, going to play small forward, or he played small forward at Cal, I should say. Could see him as a possible shooting guard in come pro, but he could be a three very well. I mean, the good things about Jaylen Brown right away are just – you know, his athletic ability, and it sounds cliche, but I mean, that's really where it is. He's one of these project dudes, got an incredible vertical leap, especially in space. He is strong enough to the point where he could maybe switch to the four if need be. This isn't a guy that I personally would want playing a lot of minutes at the four, but he has that flexibility. I think anytime you can get a guy that can go two through four, it brings a lot of versatility to your lineup.
Well, he has a 7-foot wingspan.
Right. And it's worth mentioning he was named freshman All-American. He earned all Pac-12 first team honors and was voted Pac-12 Freshman of the Year.
He can go from one side of the floor to the other in 3.8 seconds. Dude can't really shoot all that well. Every time he takes a shot where he jumps, the way he jumps and where he lands, it's really inconsistent. Kind of reminds me of how Derek Williams was shooting, even though Derek Williams in college was shooting at a good clip. That coming down at a different spot than you're landing each time doesn't look good, and he turns the ball over a lot in isolation situations. He's at like 23% because he doesn't have the handles that he thinks he has. Yeah, it's like me when I'm playing.
He's a slasher. Like, he guns a lot, and therefore I think his game is really inefficient at times.
He also had the 7th best defensive rating in the Pac-12. He limited opponents to 34.7 field goal percentage.
Yeah, it's his ability to recover, and he's really defensive minded. He reminded me of he's out of all the three players that we've talked about, or the six so far in the last two episodes, he's the one I like the least. He reminds me a lot of Archie Goodwin, and that's not a good thing.
But at the same time, it's his defense. Like, the numbers with his defense are just what's impressing me. And I want to make an Evan Turner joke here, because they're saying his best like shot area is his jump shot from like 17 feet to the 3-point arc. For whatever reason, that's like, I think they said out of 55 2-point jumpers, 20 of them were from that spot, and he hit 11 of them. Like, it's kind of impressive, but like, other than Evan Turner, everyone thinks the kind of mid-range game is kind of going away.
I don't agree with you on that completely, and I think that there are players that can really strive in the mid-range game. And I think that's really important for offenses, to have somebody on the court who can hit a mid-range shot. I mean, you know, look at Mo Spates, and he was really, really ineffective in Game 5. But having a player out there, Kevin Garnett, when he was hitting those shots, it's really valuable, because it's just another part of the floor that you have to guard.
Right, right. And actually, when we were talking about the pick and roll with our first draft prospect this time, Brown's really good at covering the pick and roll. He ended up just allowing 0.783 points per possession when it's a pick and roll scenario when he's the defender.
Yeah, I mean, I think the final line on Jaylen Brown right now is, I mean, I personally have him around 7 or 8 on my board. I think that he's a guy who has all the tools to be successful. You just want to see it translate. So I can see, I mean, he's going to go top 10. He'll get taken off potential alone. You just want to see it all translate. But
do you think that he has a bit of Justice Winslow in him?
I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that. Because he's much better defensively, in my opinion, than he is on offense. So I can see that a bit. I mean, offensively, he's kind of a disaster at times. I mean, like you said, it's really, really inefficient. And I think that's going to be the biggest concern of what anybody that drafts Jaylen Brown is going to have to cut down on. But thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We really appreciate you guys. Good to have all three of us back in the building. Make sure you check.
Hold on. We haven't even asked Justin. Were you able to save the kids by helping the elderly?
Yes. Yes, I was.
That's good. You're a difference maker out there. But you can check out all of our episodes at drivingdishpodcast.com. Make sure you check out our sponsors there as well. If you're an Apple user, we're on iTunes. Leave us a review while you're there. If you're not an Apple user, no worries. We're on Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn. Also, shout out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio, as always, for hosting the program.
And if you want to support this podcast, the way that you can do it is by supporting our sponsors. And if you have any questions about how to do that, just go to driveanddishpodcast.com. Click on the sponsors tab on the top right hand corner, and all the information on all our sponsors, Loot Crate, Seat Geek, and Daily NBA Highlights, are right there for you at drivingdishpodcast.com.
And if you want to follow us on anything social media, just search under Facebook, under Twitter, under Instagram, Drive and Dish Podcast will pop up.
We do.
We do.
Hey, also the discussions on Facebook this week have been really lively. So yeah. You know, what was that? Shout out one time. Is that what the kids say?
That's what the kids say.
Well, who are you one timing?
Like, all of them.
You can't just you can't shout out one time and the discussions have been great. No, you have to say shout out to the Facebook listeners one time.
Shout out to the Facebook listeners one time.
Good.
Good.
Okay. I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.